Welcome to season two of the Savage Pads podcast. I'm your host, Doug Battle, and it is almost football season. That means I'm very excited. My bets you're very excited as well. And I want to start this thing off by giving you a taste of what's to come in our show this year. This is part one of the best of season one of the Savage Pads podcast.
Practice every day.
Man, oh man. Mono ain't mono.
He's definitely 6 hour mods, me and myself. As close as we have right now to rope climb.
When we scored, I honestly did not know where I was for about 5 seconds.
Early on, you could see with Jake, just like with Fran talking to him.
Maybe one of the most underappreciated quarterbacks in the country.
And we got to keep feeding the running back.
I don't think we've yet to see the tight ends.
I think Georgia does a great job bringing pressure on third down.
Turn around 2 weeks later in the SEC championship, we look like a completely different team, and we made them look like a completely different team.
I mean, it's hard to get emotional thinking about it.
And it was my job to kind of get outside the corner.
As soon as I let it go, I knew it was good.
From that point on, I kind of began to trust the Eric Murray as my quarterback.
The kid was just special.
Tyler Simmons, he was onside.
Everybody respects the specs.
That's what every Georgia fan should hinge their hopes on.
Alabama and Georgia are the best two teams in the country.
I feel like we are the true running back youth.
I have great confidence that we're going to see the personification of Georgia football.
All right, that last voice you heard was Brooke Whitmire, the voice of Sanford Stadium. Brooke has announced the games in Athens for as long as I can remember, but what most people don't know is that Brooke holds a wealth of experiences at Georgia football games going back to when he was a little boy. And when he came on the show, he shared this incredible experience that he had with his father at one of the greatest Georgia football games of all time. You got to hear it. You've been to a lot of Georgia Florida games over the years. What's your favorite memory from that series?
Got to be 1980, Doug. I can't think about Florida without thinking about my dad. Grew up. My dad, I'll just tell you quickly, was really a great guy. He was born in the Depression, served his country in World War II, and somehow, as a young man, was able to go to the University of Georgia and get a business degree in 1950. And then, Doug, he did something. It was really interesting to me thinking back on it. The rules were different at the time, and my dad was working in the insurance business and was not married until he was 37. And so he recruited heavily for Georgia. Back then, the NCAA rules were different. He was one of a handful of folks that were not coaches or not employed by Georgia, but he would travel with the team, did a lot of recruiting, and drove around the state with Dan McGill in an old car asking people for $10 to help start the Georgia Bulldog Club. You got to understand, this was in the 50s when Tech was beating us 8 in a row, and things were not great for Georgia. And so I tell you, one of my prized possessions, I've got several frames worth of old sideline passes and ticket stubs of his going back from the 50s and 60s and on. So
wow.
All that to say, Doug, my lineage, I grew up, I mean, as long as I can remember, I was a dog. My dad was a DGD before anybody understood what the term meant. And so I grew up in the 70s. I think my first trip to Sanford Stadium was in 1976. And actually, I thought about this earlier. I don't think I missed a game. I know the last one I missed was in 1981. I missed the Temple game of all games in 1981 and haven't missed one since then.
Wow.
So really, Doug, going back, since I was a kid from 1976 on, I've missed one game in that stadium. And so I say all that to say that it was obviously a huge part of the fabric of my upbringing. And my dad, beginning in 1978, 40 years ago, I can't imagine doing this with a 10-year-old son, but he took me to the Georgia-Florida game. And we stayed out of a lot of the goings-on there, as you might imagine.
Sure.
But, Doug, in 1980, my dad and I were there, and everybody's got a story that was there, but it was obviously a magical game, an unbelievable game. And one of the things I'll never forget is that there were a couple of twin brothers in front of us, sitting on the row in front of us. One of them was a Georgia guy, one of them was a Florida guy. And they were giving each other grief all day long as the game progressed. It was kind of back and forth. And when Florida took that lead and did that coffin corner punt, I can see it like it was yesterday, Doug. That guy, the Georgia guy, the twin brother that was the Georgia guy, packed up all of his stuff and left, and it was good natured. I mean, they were giving each other grief, but it was all in good brotherly fun, I guess. With the Georgia guy leaves. It's third down and 11, as we all know. And Doug, when Buck went back to pass, I know you've seen it, but when you see the film, it looked like he was going to be sacked. And Nat Hudson ended up making what I would call the greatest block in Georgia history. But before he made that block, I was sure that Buck was going to get sacked. And I put my head down in between my knees. And so I missed the first half of the play.
Oh, no.
I hear the crowd yelling, and I'm thinking it's because of a sack. Well, I look up, Doug, and all I can see, it's from my left to right, I see this glorious scene. I mean, it's hard to get emotional thinking about it, but all I can see is the four, and I think it's Herschel. Because Herschel, as you know, dominated the Gators for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking it's Herschel Walker taking it to the house again. And so I'm yelling for Herschel to score. Everybody else knows that it's Lindsey. Well, he scores, as you know, it's bedlam, it's crazy. And I remember looking at my dad and saying, was that Herschel? And he just gave me the one-word answer, Scott. And so we go nuts, Doug. And what a lot of people forget is, man, we had to kick off. I mean, there's like a minute plus left. We got a 15-yard. It wasn't called this then, but it was basically a celebration penalty. We kick off from the 25. They've got it. You know, I'm thinking they're going to break our hearts. If you go back and look at of course, we went for two, and I think Buck, I've never asked him this, but if you look at it, his adrenaline was so stoked. He just threw a rocket past. Lindsey Scott was open for the two-point conversion, but he threw a rocket past him. So we're up five. They're going to drive to beat us, I'm just sure. But Mike Fisher picked it off. We held on for the win. Of course, it was just bedlam. And the thing I remember, Doug, about that time, after the celebration is going on, people are hugging each other that you don't, you know, people you don't know are hugging you. People are just yeah. going crazy. And I look up, and here comes that Georgia guy back up the aisle, running to see his brother, the Florida fan. And I mean, it was surreal. And then we find out later that Tech had tied Notre Dame, which was a big deal. And so, obviously, that's one I'll never forget.
Yeah, my guy Brooke is very gifted with words. And I would do anything for half the communication skills that guy has. I mean, it's just, I can't even put it into words. And I guess that's my point exactly. But the show must go on, and another fantastic guest we had last year was Matt Stinchcomb, College Football Hall of Famer, college football analyst on ESPN, and that's something we had the opportunity to talk about. But the thing I want to share with you all now was the segment in which he spoke about his relationship with Kirby Smart. He spoke about Kirby Smart as a player at Georgia, and he gave an impersonation of Kirby Smart that was dead on. I mean, I thought about putting it on that intro song, but it sounded like it was actually Kirby Smart, and people would have been all like, you had Kirby Smart on the show? No, I didn't have Kirby Smart on the show. I had Matt Stinchcomb on the show, and he's just as cool. Check it out. Kirby's earned that trust in his first three seasons as a head coach, but as his former teammate, can you tell Dog fans what Kirby was like as a player and as a teammate?
Yeah, he's a lot like, as a player, like you see him as a coach. Energetic is probably too narrow of a description, probably not quite as extreme or extensive enough, because you see him on the sidelines now and he's trying to coach everybody all the time and can. You know, to say that he's a really bright guy and understands the game inside and out, I think is not really doing it justice. But more than anything, you know, as a player, I think what gets overlooked is the presumption that, oh, you know, he's a great coach. He's a coach's kid. He was probably a coach on the field. And you ignore or maybe dismiss a little bit the athletic ability, his abilities as a player. He's a really, really good defensive back. He was an all-conference at safety for a reason. He was all-conference at safety at a time where the SEC East was the dominant side of the conference and a pretty accomplished one at that, because you think about the 4 years where we were at Georgia at the same time. You had two SEC East champions and two different teams represented both in the SEC East, one the being the Tennessee Volunteers in 98. And then, of course, you've got Florida winning it in 1996 and contending for another. And he's playing safety. And you're playing safety with the Peyton Mannings, the Danny Werfels, the Tim Couches, even at Kentucky in their air raid system. That ain't easy to do. And you're doing it at such a high level that you're considered an all-conference performer for either side of the SEC, much less opposite those quarterbacks. T. Martin going undefeated in 98. So for Tennessee, Kirby Smart was a really good football player. And it just so happens that he's an excellent football coach. And you can see it. It's very similar to what we would have seen in practice and on the field as a player. He's just, you know, he changes his getup on game day. He doesn't look the same as he did when we were there 20 years ago with a helmet and pads on. So he swapped it out for a visor, but they're still dragging him off the field. That strength coach keeps his hands in his waistband the whole time, dragging him back off the numbers because he can't stay off the field as a coach.
Right, right. Well, it seems like you know Kirby better than anyone else I've spoken with on the show, and I've heard you can actually give a pretty accurate impression of him. Would you mind giving us Kirby Smart's thoughts on the upcoming Sugar Bowl in your best Kirby Smart voice?
Well, you know, it's just hard for me to talk about it right now more than anything. We've been practicing and, you know, with the holidays, you know, it's been some long days, so I'm a little bit hoarse. But we're excited to take on the Longhorns. Obviously, they represent the Big 12. We've heard that they've faced a couple of defenses. We're told that they're actually going to field a defense, which you don't always anticipate out of a Big 12 team. So we expect they'll have 11 players out there. When we're on offense, they'll actually put 11 guys out there. You know, they might try to stop us. They might not. We're not real sure. So that's part of the strategy we're trying to figure out is will they actually try to keep us from scoring? But more than anything else, we're just excited to be in New Orleans and hope our guys take advantage of this opportunity to compete.
Wow. That was amazing. So you have Kirby there with you.
Yeah, he hangs out of the house.
Okay. So he's not New Orleans with the team. He's hanging out with the Stinchcombs.
No, yeah, it's pretty much a machine. He's got that machine well oiled now. So yeah. All they need is a defensive coordinator, you know, backup quarterback, maybe a starting cornerback now that DeAndre's not going to play in the game. So I think he's got this thing pretty much hemmed up.
The next segment I want to talk about features one of my favorite players of all time, and it's because he saved our season my senior year two different times. That's Davin Bellamy. The two times I'm referring to, for those of you that don't remember, are the strip sack against Notre Dame and the strip sack against Auburn in the SEC Championship. Davin Bellamy's a legend, and he's super clutch, and he has this celebration that he does when he does something really clutch, and I always wondered what it came from, so I asked him about it. Check it out. While this may not be officially trademarked, your trademarked celebration at UGA was definitely the ice in the veins motion that I first remember from the Notre Dame game last year. But a lot of students in the crowd started celebrating some of your big plays with that motion. I got to ask, when did you start celebrating like that?
actually, Notre Dame was the first time.
Okay.
People who know me that, like, I'm a big Laker fan. Like, I'm a big, big diehard Laker fan.
Okay.
Even when we're like terrible. So, at one point in time, D'Angelo Russell was like my favorite player. And every time he had a big shot, like a buzzer beater, he would point at his veins and say, like, ice in my veins. Like, the big moments don't faze me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is what I do. I got ice in my veins. So I've seen him do that, so many times. And actually, the funny thing about it is when I did a Notre Dame game and posted the video on my Instagram, he actually commented on it.
Oh,
said,
no way.
Yeah, he commented on it and said, talk that ish then. So, so that was pretty cool, man. That was a big moment for me.
Yeah, it was a big moment for me too, having Davin Bellamy on the show. 1 year removed from all of that. And it was right before the Bama game, which was really cool because Davin played against Bama the year before. Another guy that played against Bama the year before that I had the chance to interview was Aaron Davis. He had a crucial pass breakup in that game. Aaron's an interesting guy because he actually had some injury problems in high school that kept him from being a real highly touted recruit. And he came into Georgia as a walk-on, ended up being a four-year starter. I asked him all about how that came to be. You got to hear what he had to say.
Tell us what circumstances took place for you to jump from 9 to 1.
So I think I really caught a quite a bit of luck for the fact that we had Coach Grantham, and he had done a great job, but he decided to move on and become the defensive coordinator for Louisville. Mm-hmm. And so Coach Pruitt came in, and it was a whole new slate. He had to learn all the players just like we all had to learn him. And so it was kind of more of a clean slate for everybody, and that really opened the door for me. And I had always told myself that I'm going to do everything I possibly can in order to put myself in the best position possible. So I was always kind of the smart guy, quick learner. So I was able to catch on to the new playbook a lot faster than some of the other guys there. And I was just able to put on tape everything that he was looking for. And that really helped me out. And also, like with a lot of other people, the person in front of you catches the injury bug. Mm. You know, Tom Brady came out of nowhere after Drew Bledsoe got injured. And, you know, the rest is history. So somebody got injured who was ahead of me, and they were like, we need a corner. And I just ran out there on the field. And, you know, I did well. I don't think you know, any of the coaches foresaw me emerging to be one of the starters, but I started running with those, and that was my spot for the rest of the year.
Yeah, Aaron Davis is just a class act. I mean, that guy was pretty sure he was an MIS major, smart guy, taking hard classes, starting for Georgia, doing things the right way. An absolute pleasure to have on the show. Another guest who was an absolute pleasure to have on was maybe not even arguably the greatest coach in Georgia history. I mean, he won a national championship. Until someone else does that, there's no question. It's Vince Dooley. Vince joined the show. We talked about what it takes to win a championship. We talked about similarities between he and Kirby Smart. But my favorite segment from my interview with Vince Dooley was when he talked about Jake Fromm. Because Jake Fromm's a quarterback who's often compared against Aaron Murray. He's often compared against David Green. Those are quarterbacks from recent memory. Now, Vince Dooley has been with the UGA program for so much longer than most people that I get to speak with, and he had some interesting comparisons that I hadn't thought about before. You were interviewed about Fromm, and you said that you'd rather have him over any other freshman quarterback you've ever known. What's so special about Jake Fromm to you, and why do you think he's been able to hold off, you know, really talented guys in Jacob Eason and this year Justin Fields, who are competing for the same position?
He's got that that special quality of leadership and of confidence and a work ethic. Fran Tarkenton was very, very much like it. Buck Ballew, who played as a freshman for me, particularly late in the season against Georgia Tech, he had his greatest game. But those are the intangible qualities of a quarterback that early on you could see with Jake, just like with Fran Tarkenton. They've got the confidence, they've got the leadership, they've got the competitiveness, and they have the respect of the football team. Jake has really worked at it. His passing is good. It's gotten even better. His timing is great. So I have the highest respect, and as I made a statement, you're exactly right, when he had to go up to South Bend and to really have his first start in college football as a freshman, I did make the statement, I don't know of anybody, and I'd say Buck Ballew is the only other one. If I'd have had Tarkenton, I would have felt the same wave with all three of them starting that ball game.
That is high praise from the GOAT, and that is also all the time we have for today, or tonight in my case. I really appreciate you all listening to the show. It means a lot to me. If you would, give us a follow on Twitter at Savage Pads, or Instagram also at Savage Pads. That's just the handle. Keep it simple. It's just Savage Pads. Definitely encourage you to subscribe to the show on the platform of your choice. Definitely share it with any friends you know that love Georgia football. We love Georgia football. We make this for people who love Georgia football, and we're not able to do this without you. Stay tuned for the next episode.